What's getting brought up for you that is motivating your unhelpful response to this behavior? Because then you really get to more underlying issues that are these maladaptive ways of communicating when we are expressing, you know, tears or yelling or, you know, again, other physical responses.
Welcome back to Heal Your Roots podcast. I'm your co-host, Daniela Galdi, health and wellness professional here in Philadelphia. And we have got a nice conversation coming up with our other co-host and guest on connections and communications and ways to approach conversations to get deeper into your knowledge of relationships and the impacts that our connections, things like quality time and assertive communication, and what that all has to do for you with any relationship in your life. So with me is co-host and founder of Heal Your Roots Wellness, Kira.
Hi, everybody. Kira Yakubov here, founder at Heal Your Roots Wellness. On our podcast, every episode, we have a therapist in the mental health field and industry that we like to get to know as a person outside the field and their specialties and knowledge within the field. I'm super excited to have Jocelyn Justy, licensed marriage and family therapist and a therapist at Heal Your Roots Wellness. So this is going to be a really good, juicy one. All the good stuff how Daniela shared with communication, connection, different ways to effectively work through relationships. So Jocelyn, thank you again.
Yes, thank you, Kira, so much for having me. I'm excited to be here again, and I'm excited to get into some more detail about that connection that Daniela was speaking of, and excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to start with communication, right? And different ways that even though we might be communicating the words that we're trying to get across, that nonverbal body language is super, super important and imperative to think about and be mindful of when we are trying to communicate with, whether it's a partner, a friend, family member, really anybody that you value and you want them to hear what you're saying. So Jocelyn, do you have any thoughts or anything that comes up at the top of your head about nonverbal communication and things like that?
Absolutely. I had several couples who one partner would come to me and say, they're not getting my vibe that I'm putting off, that I might need help or that I'm suffering right now. And I asked, I was like, oh, did you articulate that? You know, did you share that with them? Well, no, I didn't, but I want them to tell from like my body language, like my face looks kind of sad. My shoulders might be a little more tense. You know, I'm a little more withdrawn. So I think my partner really should be recognizing that. So I was like, okay, let's take a step back and look at this for a second. One, yes, we cannot read minds at the end of the day. That's where that assertive communication is very important. But then two, it's very important to bring in a mindfulness and self-awareness piece as to when these nonverbal cues are getting put off. Because maybe some people aren't comfortable saying, hey, I'm in a really bad place. I need some support right now, but I'm showing you through my body language. So that's something that I've noticed lately that I've been trying to teach, is that mindfulness of like what to look for. So for example, again, are they looking down at the ground? Are they not making eye contact? Do they appear more withdrawn? Is their personality different in any way? Are they throwing off a fatigue vibe? Or, again, is there any behavior changes you can see from a nonverbal perspective that I like to point out?
I was going to ask you if like an eye contact thing is very key to that, because I can imagine, and I put myself in that experience where I'm very big on looking people in the eye, but then those times where I won't turn my head, right, or I won't absorb what's happening, what am I actually, like, in that sense, what kind of nonverbal cue would that be to others? Not to say do that, right, but just to kind of be aware if they're doing it themselves.
I would say if it's different than your quote unquote normal behavior, normal interaction. So if you like to make eye contact with people a lot, and then one day, let's say you're feeling down and you're just not looking anybody in the eye whatsoever, that's a significant behavioral change, right? It's a different affect. It's a different, you're not looking at anybody. So therefore something might be wrong. You might be stressed. Maybe you're not yourself that day, because again, even the slight little behavioral changes or body language can indicate something's going on that's different for us.
So I love that you brought that up, even just wanting someone to read our mind or expecting them to. And I feel like this is where relationships get a little fuzzy around responsibility or accountability, right? Is that every conversation and relationship, it's a two-way street, right? So there's a little bit that each person needs to do or can do to get a message across, right? So in relationships, we want to attune to our partner, basically how you're sharing, Jocelyn, like we want to be able to like know them well enough that we can read the behavior is off or different and be able to check in with our partner. And it's also the other person's responsibility to express like, hey, there's something coming up for me, or I'm upset, or I'm angry with you, and not just expect our partner to guess or poke or prod, right? So both people are kind of responsible for making sure that communication gets across to each other.
So just how you said that, Kira, is there a way for our listeners that you or Jocelyn would suggest saying that? And I will preface it with saying like, is it healthy to say, and I'm rolling my eyes because probably not, but I can't read your mind, which I have said before. What is the best way to then, like a prompt almost in a sense, to start that sentence off to express yourself?
I use I statements. I always go back to I statements. You know, either it's, I want to know what's going on with you. I'm noticing something different for you. You know, or you can say something like, I'm here if you need support right now. So like the responsibility part that Carol was talking about, you put that responsibility in their hands and it's their responsibility to express if something is the matter. Because nonverbal cues can be helpful, right? But we have to be able to articulate or verbally express what's happening in those moments. So I statements and refraining from blaming language when you're asking those questions, I think lowers our defenses and can create a more safe space for us to be open with our partners.
Absolutely. Right. And I think that I think we get caught up, which is normal, we're human, right? We get caught up in our own experience and our own feelings of what's going on and from our perspective of how we feel. So if we see our partner being cold, moving away from us, we obviously notice something is off. But if we're like, why are you being cold? Right? Like, how do you think your partner is going to respond to that, even if they are being cold and expecting you to mind read, right? It's still our responsibility to kind of like gently approach them. Like, you know, I'm starting to feel like we're not really talking today. I'm getting a feeling that maybe you're pulling away. Am I getting that right? Or is something else going on, right? We want to leave like an open-ended question for them to have an opportunity to share how they're feeling. And not only share how they're feeling, but like feel safe to share how they're feeling. Because if we're coming at them like, why are you being so cold and distant from me today? They're going to be like, oh, probably because that's how you talk to me, right? Like it's a little aggressive or a little hostile. So it's also kind of considering your partner and leaving an open-ended question for them to respond to that they feel welcoming to like talk back and give an explanation of what's going on for them internally. How does this show up for you when you have a couple who has very different communication styles, or they might have the same one, which I feel like sometimes might butt heads even more?
Yeah, it really depends. So if I have two people who, let's say, are more passive, right? So maybe they're a little bit more indecisive. They don't like conflict. So they're the avoiders. They won't talk about something. They'll just kind of continue to go about their day. I like to gently challenge that and bring up, hey, we need to talk about this. And I like to use the three C's, even if people are uncomfortable talking about this, is be clear, be concise, be considerate. And it goes a long way knowing those three C's. So when you have two avoidant people who, again, like we said, aren't going to bring up conflict, I will sit them down and ask them to, hey, let's make some eye contact. I want you to take each other's hand, look at each other in the eye, and I want you to gently express what's going on and what you're upset about. And we're not going to respond right away, but we're going to give someone the space to process it. So that way, it's reinforced to the speaker that, hey, even though I'm very uncomfortable sharing this right now, my partner's giving me good feedback in a safe space, like you were talking about earlier, Kira. So that's where I try to like normalize it and get people to work through the uncomfortable.
I think it's underestimated how tough it can be for people to share how they feel. because of wanting to avoid conflict or wanting, like, perceiving that sharing a feeling that might be like different than their partner's opinion or how they usually talk, or even just like their usual interaction, sometimes change or anything different that's not a positive interaction can feel so uncomfortable. And I also think, I love that you say, like, to normalize it, because anytime we're in a relationship, we're going to have different opinions. We're going to have a different experience. And if we can't express that, then we're not being authentic, and we're probably going to end up pretending and people pleasing a lot, right? Which is its own, we can go into that topic in like that episode for days and days. And I personally have like really, really worked on overcoming people pleasing habits and like tendencies and wanting to avoid conflict, because it just feels more comfortable to not do the thing. But like you're saying, it's so important and imperative in any relationship to be able to discuss that, and being able to push ourselves and have like grow tolerance for discomfort.
It's definitely a practiced way to communicate, is what it sounds like. And also what I heard earlier, and we were talking about the nonverbal situations, you mentioned, Jocelyn, about, you know, hold each other's hands. And I wanted you to explain that. I caught that, and I thought, oh, that was something in there that was a little bit more body language. So explain that reasoning.
Think about it, right? When we're holding each other's hands, right, this physical touch, the brain is making these connections. And, you know, typically whenever we have physical touch paired with verbal communication and it's a positive place, we're just reinforcing these connections in our brain that it's a good space, that, hey, I have a safe feeling with my partner. We're holding each other's hands. We're making that connection with each other while expressing our concerns. So it like counterbalances this discomfort and then this need to express yourself. So again, therefore we're more connected, and the brain, right? I just want to continuously positively reinforce and make new positive connections in the brain, especially when it comes to conflict with couples, that it's okay to do this. And you just feel closer to your partner with that physical touch. So that's where I was kind of going with that.
And you know what that makes me think of? So for Gottman, the bids for a connection and bids for affection. Mm-hmm. And so Gottman is a researcher, like a couples researcher, and he has done a lot of studies and experiments with couples when they're arguing. And he has done so many that he is able to tell within, I think it's the first 2 to 3 minutes of an argument, if it's going to go well or not. And he can predict if they're going to stay together or get divorced. It's really wild. And so he's able to see this because within the first few minutes of bringing up like a heavy topic or a conflict is, how are you approaching each other? Because the onset is so important. And Jocelyn, how you're saying is like having that body language that's showing affection, it just reduces mm-hmm. our defensiveness, and it reduces our feelings of being attacked or feeling shameful or feeling like we want to like crawl inside ourselves and avoid it or start arguing, right? I think it kind of takes away those fight, flight, or freeze kind of attributes within our nervous system, right? Because mm-hmm. if we feel like we're being attacked, if we feel embarrassed, if we feel shameful, immediately all those defenses go up and we're not actually hearing anything that our partner's saying. And having that physical touch to be like, you know what, like, I know this is a tough conversation. I don't want to do this either, but we should. But I still love you and I'm still here and we're going to be able to work through this. It's like, thank you. Okay. Like, yeah, this does suck, but we can get through this because we're figuring it out together and not against each other.
I think too, it's, you want to genuinely work on that relationship, right? You have this willingness to change and you can take accountability. And those are the things that I think are so helpful in couples therapy, especially because if you don't check those boxes, sometimes, you know, couples therapy might not even be appropriate in that time. Because like Kira said, right, you have to make that safe space for your partner and be comfortable doing that work, essentially.
So, hey, this might be a little bit in left field, but when it comes to what you're both talking about, what happens when, like, emotions come into play? For example, I am a crier, so I can try. I try to get out, you know, express myself, communicate, and in the way that you're both saying, as healthy that I know, as healthfully as possible that I know. But I cry. And so what happens when that type of situation happens? I felt in the past it can throw people off. But really, it's just like I release very easily through my tear ducts. And so what? How does that come into play when like an emotion like that or a physical emotion comes out in that sense? That's almost, I feel, automatic for me.
I don't think that is necessarily a you thing. If I was in a session and someone started tearing up and started crying and their partner got something activated in them, they got uncomfortable with it and you were no longer able to communicate about what you were communicating, I would ask that partner, like, what is it about this response? What's getting brought up for you that is motivating your unhelpful response to this behavior? Because then you really get to more underlying issues, these maladaptive ways of communicating when we are expressing, you know, tears or yelling or, you know, again, other physical responses.
Jocelyn, I love how you always take the kind of like the behavioral approach and like the brain underneath in the moment. I think that totally agree with that, being able to kind of check in with the partner to see like, what about these tears or this physical expression of the emotion is uncomfortable. But I also want to normalize that like, it's okay to cry and it is a natural release of what your emotions are. And I think sometimes tears can, it depends how we view or use something, right? Like if it's a natural response and our partner just kind of like stops and doesn't know what to do with that, and if we start to learn over time, hey, if I cry, I can get this conversation to stop, that can be manipulative, right? That's why intention is always so important around behaviors, because we're kind of using that as a weapon against them. But I cry very easily too, right? Like my partner knows that. And we work through, we don't have to necessarily like stop the entire conversation and be done because they shared something that might have been hurtful for me or might have been hard for me to like swallow hearing. We just need to pause, like take a pause for a moment, self-soothe, and then be able to express what just came up for you to your partner and still have the space to hear what they brought up, right? Because sometimes it's tough because then the focus turns to the person crying, what they're experiencing, being compassionate, right, is important to slow down, but it's really important to return back to the initial conversation that we had so that the other person feels like it's safe to share whatever it is that they need to talk about. Because that could start to make them feel like, well, I can't share tough things because A, my partner starts to cry, which is okay, but then I feel bad making them feel bad and the conversation doesn't end up going anywhere, right? So it's kind of making sure there's space for both people's feelings and emotions. And it's tough in couples therapy, right? Because we have to slow down and we have to go back and forth. It's a little bit of like this ping pong of making sure that each person feels heard and like validated in those feelings. So I don't know if that answered your question. That was a very wordy response.
It absolutely did. And I want to recap because you both had so many great points just in these last few minutes, just about being intentional, practicing, taking the pause. I love Jocelyn earlier you said your three C's, be clear, be concise, be considerate, and just paying attention to how body language and nonverbal situations are happening, and also how, you know, something like touch can be really effective.
I just wanted to add in, like, go what you said really quick. A good helpful tip is having like a 5-minute check-in. So if you do notice something with the nonverbal or notice something off, have you and your partner just do this 5 to 10 minute check-in, nothing too elaborate, but it just gives you a nice space to just check in. Hey, are you cool? Like, what's going on? And if so, let's address it real quick and then kind of move on our days. That can be super helpful for couples, especially in relationships.
You know, especially for couples therapy, there's a lot of stigma is that there's something, like something has to be wrong. We have to be like in a bad cycle, that all we're going to talk about in therapy is the conflict. You know, obviously that is part of it. But I think the other huge part is the goal that sometimes people miss is that this is all so that you feel more connected and safe and present with your partner. So it's not always focusing on the conflict resolution, which is important, but it's also focusing on, like, how do I feel more closer to my partner? How do I recognize when I am feeling connected? How do I recognize when my partner feels connected? How does that feel? How does that impact my mental health and my day-to-day? So I would love to dive into feeling more connected and being able to kind of differentiate all those different parts together. How do you feel, Jocelyn? Are you ready for that?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of, I mean, shoot, connection means 15 million things in my mind, right? And I think it can mean so many different things to each individual that's part of that couple system. So yeah, I'm ready to get into it.
So how would you define connection? I know that you just said, like, there's 15 million different ways, but, like, what would be a couple different things that kind of come up for you thinking about feeling connected?
Yeah, you know what? I really gave this some thought because I didn't really think about what connection actually meant to me, right? I'm so used to working with people and doing that and not really kind of taking a step back to think about it for myself. So what I came up with was, how do I feel connected to my partner? Connection to me is being on a similar page and having this mutual respect and caring for each other's mental and physical and emotional well-being. Again, being on a similar page. You don't have to be on the same page to be connected, but for me, it's being on a similar page, and it's almost this non-verbal feeling you get that, hey, I enjoy your company. I enjoy just sitting here with you. We don't even have to talk. I'm connected to you through that way. And just having a mutual positive feeling towards that person. I think that's where I kind of came up with that connection feeling for me.
So I actually love that. I thought about connection too, because when I ask couples this, I'm like, okay, well, how do you know when you're feeling connected to your partner, right? Everyone has a different answer. And so that way we can give examples to our listeners. For myself, when I feel connected to my partner, it's when we're being silly, right? Like when there's, like, this positive, light kind of energy in the room between us and we're on the same page and we're, like, kind of flirty, right? But there's also this, like, lack of tension, like an absence of something unresolved, right? Because even if you might be in a good mood, if there is something that either of us might be harboring or holding on to, or that we haven't fully discussed, it kind of feels like there's a block, right? So even though I'm trying to feel connected, I kind of feel disconnected from him. So when we're able to kind of resolve something and then get on the other side, that feeling, sometimes it's hard to put into words, but it's like you said, we're on a similar page and we're doing things as a team, right? So also having, like, routine and rituals. I love having a ritual. So I know that sometimes we think that routines mean, like, we're stuck, we're in a rut, it's the same crap over and over again, right? And, like, sometimes that can happen, but that's why I like to call them a ritual. So it's like every day I know and can rely on the fact that we're going to wake up in the morning, we're going to make coffee, and we're going to take our dog for a walk, and we're going to talk about everything, whether that's life, what we have going on that day, looking forward to future plans, talking about whatever stressful thing we just got over. Right. So it's like having built in time that we've prioritized for each other makes me feel connected. And, like, I love having that ritual piece to it as well. And sometimes couples don't have a consistent ritual. And if it's not intentionally built in somehow into your schedule, then it's so easy for it to just be missed and whoop, there it goes. The connection walked out the door.
That's a great perspective. I really love that you added that in about ritual, because I'm thinking, you know, maybe that's why, like you mentioned, your walk in the morning with the dog, or a dinner time, right? Time together for dinner, and, or, you know, like pillow talk, right? Adding in that value is such a great point. And I love that you brought up the ritual, because as you were both talking, I was thinking and asking myself again, you know, what is connection? And it aligns really a lot with what you were both saying, but finding that, like, place of peace with each other. And I feel like, to piggyback off of what you said, Kira, when you have that ritual in place and you're both in agreement with it and then on the same similar page of it, right, Jocelyn, like you mentioned, that is where it can be a great spot to start finding those places of peace.
Absolutely. And it feels so easy at that point. You know, it's like Kira said, you can be just silly. You can let that guard down and being goofy and just like act like being best friends, basically. You know, we kind of forget that sometimes. We add in that friendship component into the romantic one, and that goes such a long way. So I love that. I love that connection piece, especially bring humor into your relationships. It can go such a long way.
Think about like when you're friends with, I know we're all girls here. So like your closest girlfriends, like there's something about that relationship that is so hard to have matched. But I think underneath it is being super silly with one another, being vulnerable and feeling safe to be vulnerable, having each other's back and knowing that like, regardless of what's going on, this person has my best interest in mind and feeling open to like feedback and telling each other stuff. And whether it is like being able to call each other out on stuff, but you're okay with it because you know this person loves you and it's not because they want you to feel bad ever. It's like, all right, if they're telling me this, then it means, you know, it probably means something serious, so I should probably listen to it, right? But having those similar interests and like being friends, just thinking of each other, right? Like, how do you make your partner feel special and cared for and loved on a daily basis, right? Like, are you thinking about how do I make them feel loved and special every day? And not every single day is going to work, right? Because obviously we have our own individual things, our work, whether we have kids, other family members, but making sure that that's a thought that goes through our head at least once each day regularly. What do you think, Jocelyn? Does that come up for you too?
Oh, yeah, because I think that's where rituals come into play. Like, for us, no matter what happens, I am going to get, like, a hug and a kiss goodbye, right? Like, hey, have a good day. I love you. And it doesn't matter if we have had the worst fight. It doesn't matter if, like, I'm pissed that he left all the lights on. Like, that is our go-to. Like, and so if that were to get disrupted, then we would both be like, oh, man, something is really wrong. But again, I think it doesn't matter what your ritual is. As long as you have something that you can pretty much put into practice that's practical and realistic for your situation, right? I can't emphasize enough what is realistic for your situation. It can create that connection and it can make you feel loved and it can make you feel that, okay, hey, this person, they do love me and I do love them. So let's make this ritual consistent. That way we can continuously feel that connection, even when you have your off days, right? Like Kira said, we're all human. We all have crappy days. That's fine, right? That doesn't matter. But it's your partner that matters, right? You want to put that energy into them. So I think that's where those rituals can just be extremely helpful.
Jocelyn, I love that you mentioned having it be realistic, right? Because sometimes we can have very lofty goals for ourselves, our relationship, like even saying, because I know it's like very common, like have a date night every week. And like, that is not always possible, especially if people have young kids or they're working. Like, our schedules are crazy. Adulting is tough. Having a date night every week, while that is a wonderful goal to work towards, it's probably not realistic, right? Like, super small that are everyday things that you can do. Like, greeting and saying goodbye to your partner every day is huge. And physical touch. Even if your love language is not physical touch, I do think it's really important that at some point each day, you're showing your partner some kind of physical affection. Because releasing that oxytocin and having, Jocelyn, how you were saying earlier, like conditioning your brain to know that like at the beginning of the day, at the end of the night, me and my partner touch. I feel this loving emotion. Even if we didn't get to talk all day, even if we got into a fight, it's like the overarching theme is that we're a team and this is just one drop in the bucket of a bad day and it doesn't have to mean anything negative about the rest of the relationship. So I like to use this one example of an emotional piggy bank. So I don't know if listeners have heard for emotional piggy bank. So it's thinking about making deposits. Like if you go to the bank, you know, you get paid every week or every other week, you make those deposits in. And then let's say you get hit with a fee. That fee is like, well, it's not great, right? Nobody wants to pay the fee. But because there is a lump sum of deposits in there, it doesn't really take that big of a hit. The account can withstand this fee. Kind kind of like in relationships, right? If you're constantly depositing these small acts of affection and love over and over when you have a really big fight or when either of you hurt each other, it takes a hit, but the relationship can withstand it because there's been more loving deposits than withdrawals in the relationship.
That's a great visual. I love that. That's amazing.
So I had a couple do this in a session where I was like, okay, I would like you to sit across from each other, hold each other's hands, and I want you to make eye contact. And I set the goal for 5 minutes. 5 minutes might not seem like a lot. However, when you are sitting there holding someone's hand and staring them in the eye, it can seem like an eternity. However, if you can, depending on your threshold or your tolerance for this, if you can get past that first minute, it was amazing what information came out for this couple. You could tell that they were so connected with each other because their hands were initially a little tighter, but then I could see them loosening their grip. So to me, that made me think, okay, they're getting more relaxed with each other. And when one partner was like, I don't know what to say, and they tried to kind of pull me into it, they're like, well, what do you think about this? The other partner's like, no, hey, come back to me. Like, this, we're supposed to be here right now. I didn't say a word. And it was amazing because as soon as this person pulled their partner back in, the conversation was just so positive and helpful. And they were like, I haven't felt this connected or even looked into your eyes like this in years. And it was just so overwhelming and so powerful that I just can't emphasize taking 5 minutes and doing this maybe once a week or just practicing to hold each other's hand, to look at each other in the eye, because it's so intimate at the end of the day, right? We're in close proximity. We're peering into each other's souls, essentially, you know? And again, it might feel a little uncomfortable, but I promise it's not a bad uncomfortable. You can work through it. I've seen it work. You get past the first 60 seconds, it's pretty good. So that was something that I had found to be extremely profound. Sorry for rhyming, but it was extremely profound.
I would cry right now from that story. So beautiful. I'm going to make everybody hold my hand now.
It was incredible to watch. It was. And I told them, I was like, I appreciated them letting me be part of that moment, right? Like, it took a lot of guts and a lot of vulnerability for them to even do that exercise in front of me. And to me, I was like, you guys are comfortable with me. You're letting me in. And that vulnerability piece is one of the biggest strengths, in my opinion, as a human being, because it's tough to get there, right? Depending on our past, depending on, you know, what vulnerability means to us. But once we get there, I don't really have the words to describe how awesome it was to be part of something like that, you know, and I hope people can, you know, get comfortable with that and really practice it, because it will help strengthen your intimacy, right? Your ability to just share and be present with each other.
It's that tolerance to be vulnerable and sit through discomfort, right? Like, just doing that practice alone and thinking about, like, just being in silence too, how awkward people feel mm-hmm. just sitting in silence with one another and feeling like they have to fill mm-hmm. the space, or there's this expectation of them to say something, or that sometimes I find that couples feel like they always have to be having fun or they always have to be connecting and doing something. And it's normal and natural for the relationship, I don't know if, like, when viewers see the video, but to go like this, to be connected and then disconnect and come back in, right? Like, when we come back in to connect again, I think that those moments, how you're sharing, are so significant and powerful for the relationship long term, to feel like we can withstand something. Like, if we can sit in silence for 5 minutes and just stare into each other's eyes and our souls and, like, hold our hands and feel our heartbeat and our pulse through our hand, like, we can get through so much crap together, right? Like, I can literally turn and look to you and be like, okay, like, you got me? Like, I got this, right? Like, and that's where that nonverbal can start to come in, is when we're attuning to our partner and we're both on the same page. So I love that you do that exercise. That's phenomenal.
It really is. It's making me think, too, what you just mentioned about sitting with each other. Recently, I walked in with my parents. I feel like that's a start to, like, a bad story, but they were just sitting on the couch. But recently, I walked in and my parents have been married for several decades, and they were both just sitting in the living room with no TV. They might have had their phones in their hands, but they were just sitting there. And immediately I said, are you two in a fight? What's wrong? Because they just didn't have anything like stimulating happening around them. They were just sitting in the middle of the day together. And they both looked at me and laughed like, why would you think we're fighting? We're just sitting together. Right. And it was like an amazing moment to witness. And then made me self-reflect, like, wait a second, why did I go there with that? But it brings me to the question for both of you of how to tell the difference between feeling connected and disconnected.
I love that you brought that up, because I love that your parents can just chill there and not really have any external stimulation to be comfortable. So that's something me and my partner do, is that we can just, it's awesome to just sit. Like, we don't have to get into deep conversations 24/7. A lot of the, I mean, I'm more of the extrovert and he's more of the introvert, but I think it's a huge strength for couples to be able to just sit with each other. For example, if you're at the kitchen table, if you're just having coffee, if you're just sitting in the house and, you know, doing nothing essentially, to me that screams, I'm totally comfortable with you and you're comfortable with me and we can just do our own thing. You know, and not have to be so stimulated. So I think it's a huge strength.
I agree. And I think about when it's almost like when we see, I love to people watch. I don't know about the two of you, but like if I'm out at a restaurant, right? And if I see a couple and they're kind of just like just chilling and they're not really talking, I feel like the younger version of me would have thought like, oh God, they must like hate each other or like they're in such a horrible relationship. I would never want that. But then, like, now as I'm getting older and I've been in this long-term relationship, I'm like, no, it means they're giving each other a break. Like, they're allowed to just kind of chill with each other and enjoy the company and not feel obligated or, like, forced to fill up the space. But I think it's the intention, right? Like, if both people are comfortable with that and they know it's, like, we're with each other all the time or we're just hanging out, I just like being with you, that's great, right? And then there's sometimes where it might be, one person is just like disconnected, like they're floating in a different place in their mind and the other partner does want to be connected and they don't know how to reach them. So I think it depends on the intention and like how each of the partners within the relationship feel about that kind of time and space. And so I think that kind of reminds me of when you asked that question, Daniela, when do you feel connected versus disconnected? It's kind of going back to the Gottman bids for affection. And so bids for affection is basically when you or your partner, right, we make this attempt to feel close to our partner. And that can look in so many different ways. That could be like, hey, did you see the news today? Or did you hear whatever, right? Or like, hey, look at this funny meme on my phone. And it might seem super silly, but like that is a reach for you to be involved in this moment with me. And it could be super dumb or like insignificant, but it's the fact that your partner is reaching out for you to connect. And so the way we respond to that is super important, right? So there's turning towards, turning away, and then just not even responding. So sometimes you might just not even respond, and that's just like nothing. Like, hey, did you see this? And there's silence, and you get nothing. Like, that's really hurtful, right? Like, that's kind of like, it can feel neglectful, right? And it can remind us maybe when we were younger of like, I couldn't get attention from the people I cared about, you know, like, screw this, I'm just going to go do my own thing. What's the point? And if we turn away from our partner, it's like, I'm doing something. Can't you see I'm doing the dishes? Like, why are you coming over here with that dumb stuff about some meme? Right? Like, that can feel really hurtful too. And the partner feels disconnected. Like, all right, not going to ask you anything today. And then when we can turn towards them, right? And that can look in two different ways. It could be like, hey, babe, you know, I want to look at this funny thing, but can you hold on for a second? Because I'm in the middle of something. It's like, okay. Or it could be like, show me, let's watch this. Like, let me get into this silly thing with you, right? Not to like spiral, go on a tangent, but like me and my partner were even going through like a little bit of a tiff around this when he was trying to get my attention and I was in the middle of doing something and I have ADHD, like very inattentive. And I'm like, okay. So I don't forget what I'm doing right now. But that was totally dismissing him and what he was trying to share. And so what I should have done was pause and say, hey, hold on a second. Let me finish this thing. I'm done. I'm all ears. What did you want to tell me? So I think the way we react and respond to each other, we can either feel really disconnected or we can feel super connected by just knowing that the response to each other is going to feel so different. I don't know if that answered your question. I know what I went very wordy with that one.
No, I like that, because going along with that is making sure that we don't accidentally negatively reinforce anybody when they are making an attempt to come to us, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we do, we can sometimes put people in what's called a double bind, right? So essentially for the listeners, that's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. If I want physical touch and you try to give me physical touch, but I like push you away. It's like, well, like Kira said, why should I try to do this again? So I think that can be sometimes, again, being mindful, being self-aware can help with that connection.
What is an example of positive versus negative reinforcement for anybody listening? I just want to make sure that it's clear.
I would say a positive reinforcement would be like Kira said, hey, not right now, but maybe in 5 minutes. So that way you're not invalidating anyone or having them feel dismissed or disregarded for their need. Negative reinforcement could be like an example Kira gave, I think, is like, what do you want right now? I'm busy. Can't you see I'm busy? Right? And it's like, whoa, I'm just trying to share something with you, you know, like, why are you giving me this response? So I think anything that's met with like a tone that's feeling dismissive or invalidating is the negative reinforcement part.
Thinking about the positive and negative reinforcement, I'm thinking back to when we even learned about this in school, right? And a lot of this is like done every single day or even with children while we're growing up, is we do positive reinforcement with the intention of increasing a behavior to keep going. And we do negative reinforcement when we want to decrease a behavior from continuing, right? So if you want your partner to keep approaching you and sharing things about their day or sharing how they feel, you have to really be mindful of your response to them. So if you're responding in a kind way or an open way or a patient way, they're going to be like, okay, this is safe. They want me to keep doing this. They're going to continue approaching you. If when they approach you and you give a nasty remark or you push them away or you get annoyed or frustrated every time, they're going to learn, I shouldn't continue doing this behavior. And we condition people in our life like that all the time without even recognizing it a lot of the time. Because sometimes it could be subconscious, but it's really like your tone, your body language, your eye contact, and the message you're sending. Like, is the message you're sending, hey, keep coming and do this, or you're annoying me? So if you make the other person feel like they're annoying you, they're more likely not going to keep approaching you, because why would they? But if the message that gets across is, this is, I love when you come towards me, even when I'm busy and I'll let you know I'm busy, but I like when you do this, they're going to want to keep coming towards you. So I think having that intention and energy expressed between words is important, so that you recognize, like, if your partner stopped, ooh, we might get into another one of sex, or like if your partner has stopped initiating, and that was kind of what they used to always do, it's maybe thinking about, how have I responded to their initiation? Have I shut it down every single time, and the way I shut it down makes them feel rejected? They're going to stop initiating. So I can't necessarily be surprised when that happens, right? Or if, and this is obviously like talking about sex, is you're not always going to want to, and it's obviously okay to say no, it has to be consensual, right? But it's just the way that we respond is so important to how behaviors are going to continue or stop continuing.
You just want to create that positive feedback loop, because a lot of times that's where couples get stuck, is this negative feedback loop, because they're just feeding the negativity or they're feeding these unwanted or unhelpful behaviors. I think especially during times of conflict or disagreements. So it's like Kira said, if you can build up this tolerance and work through that discomfort and create this new positive feedback loop, that's ultimately the goal, right? Again, it's not going to be perfect all the time, but what I say is, you know, setbacks are normal. They're going to happen. It's just what you do with those setbacks in those moments to kind of get back to the positive feedback loop.
And so what would you say? So I know that we're kind of going on positive and negative reinforcement. What would some quality time look like? Like, is there anything you've suggested for couples for quality time? Let's say when they are being intentional, when they do want to be realistic and say, this is the time we're putting each day, week, month, for our relationship.
And I want to just to define quality time. There's uninterrupted quality time. And then there's, you know, just time spent doing everyday things in the house, right? Like technically you're still together if someone's doing the dishes and somebody is, you know, running the vacuum or something in a different room. Yes, you are together and you might be chilling and watching TV later. Yes, you're together. But I'm talking about this uninterrupted quality time where you are making that connection and you are feeling connected with each other. So for example, the uninterrupted quality time to me is we're going to sit down and we're going to have a dinner and we're going to have some conversation around one to three things. You know, it's just us. We don't have the phones are put away. We're not answering emails. There's no external stimulation that could be distracting. It's just me and my partner. So that's very important, again, and a big differentiation between just, you know, your normal day-to-day stuff and, again, uninterrupted quality time that builds connection between the two people.
I have a question there. How might you respond if an individual who is a part of a partnership isn't receptive to that, right? How has that ever come into play where one of the partners is trying and then the other person, it's like they don't want to? Like, does that happen? Is there coming back from that?
I think it depends really, but I mean, if someone isn't, they don't want to spend quality time with you, I'm not sure how strong that relationship is at the end of the day, you know, because you want to feel connected and you might want to step outside, again, your comfort zone to have this uninterrupted quality time with each other. And if you don't, I would just ask, okay, well, what does that say about the relationship? What does that say about you? What does it say about them? It could be a good opportunity to dive a little deeper if there's something, you know, really going on. But I would ask that person, you know, does this person deserve that? Are they behaving in a certain type of way that has this disconnect with the quality time? You don't know, Kira. What do you think? Like,
yeah, I think that's a great question, and I do see that come up in couples therapy or just like relationships around me, right? Is that there's this level of commitment, right? And commitment looks different in every relationship. And I think it's really important in the beginning when people start dating is one, being self-aware about how much connection and quality time do I need in a relationship to feel loved? And how much does my partner need? And if that looks wildly different, then in the long term, it may just not work out. It may just be a misalignment, right? Like if one partner is super independent, they love to travel all the time. They like to meet other people. They don't like to be in one spot. They like to have time on their own, which is okay. And they meet somebody who wants to spend a lot of physical time together and quality time together. Over time, that's going to be a conflict, right? If they can't find a compromise in the middle of how they can respect each other's autonomy, but also respect and prioritize the relationship, it may not work out, right? And so this is a great question because I'm even thinking about personally, right? Like my partner has ADHD hyperactive, right? So he needs a lot of external stimulus to focus on one thing at a time, right? And I love to have a lot of attention, undivided attention on me within a relationship. And so when we first started dating, he would have the TV playing. He would have music playing. He would be looking at stuff on his phone and I would be talking to him and we wouldn't be making eye contact. And I would just feel like, hello, are you here? He's like, yeah, I can hear you. I can multitask. I'm like, I can't multitask. If I hear a sound in the background, I'm like a squirrel. Like, what? And I lose my train of thought. It took us a while to talk through and like work that out, that it's not because he's not listening. It's that he needs external stimulus to focus on something. And he understood that it makes me feel unheard if we don't have eye contact, if we don't have uninterrupted time together. And so we figured out a ritual. We're going to go on a walk every morning where he is stimulated by walking, looking at the surroundings, and we can still talk to each other and we can still meet that need for each of us. So it depends on the willingness to kind of work through that and navigate that versus this is just the misalignment in the relationship. Like, we just need two vastly different things.
You also bring up a good point with compatibility, right? Some people just aren't compatible at the end of the day, and that's okay. But it's that self-awareness piece. And like Kira said, like, even looking at the relationship from the very beginning, are, you know, expressing those needs, expressing how you receive love, like figuring out like, okay, is this person, are they going to be able to meet my needs? Are they going to be able, am I going to be able to compromise too with them at the end of the day? So again, that compatibility piece can be extremely powerful. It might not give us the answer we necessarily want, but you have to look at too, like, you know, what's my self-worth? What do I deserve at the end of the day? So I think that could be a helpful, just mindfulness piece right there too.
And it's tough because it's basically differentiating between, is this something that we can compromise and navigate through, or are we asking too much of each other that is not realistic and is just going to cause more tension and conflict at the end of the day? And we can't answer that for couples. Only couples can decide that on their own and within the relationship with each other of their level of willingness and what they're capable of. I think that's important too, is like, is this partner capable to give me what I need realistically? Even if they really want to, are they capable of it? And they may not be. And that, it sucks and it's hurtful, but at the end of the day, I guess it's better to know that ahead of time and be able to amicably step away and be like, this is a compatibility issue, and go their separate ways and find someone who is more compatible in that way.
These are really great points you're both making. And to sum it up, relationships deserve effort and work. And it's an important thing I want the listeners to hear. That's where the third party, that's where you all come in, the therapists and the professionals there to help to work through it. To everybody, you know, we're working through it, and it helps to have that third party. And, you know, it's okay. I find myself talking with a lot of friends and my own experiences too, where, you know, I'll start to compare and I'll be like, oh, just, it should be easy. It should be easy. But hearing everything we just spoke about, it can be, but there's a lot of work that needs to go into it in order to find that peace. So I want listeners to hear that and think, hopefully, you know, think about hope, that there is hope, but there's also effort that ties in there. And it's a journey. It really is. It's not a one and done. It's going to continue so that you and your partners can continue to grow. And all the things that you mentioned, I just think are so helpful in just scratching the surface of identifying that for people. So with that said, is there anything else either of you want to touch on with connection before we sign off for today?
You made that comment about it can be easy, but it does take effort. Because I believe that 100%. Relationships are awesome, but they do take work at the end of the day. And I think we make a conscious choice to choose every single day whether we're putting an effort to our partners, whether we love our partners. I think it's a day-to-day choice. And I think maybe reminding us of that can maybe ease some of the tension or stress that goes into those relationships. And hope. I love that you said that, like having hope at the end of the day. It might sound a little cliche, but I feel like we forget that sometimes in our busy lives, is being hopeful. And just the concept of hope in general, I think, can alleviate some tension and, you know, bring us some peace at the end of the day.
Something that I want to add that I have kind of developed with couples as I've been, you know, as a therapist working with couples over the years, is having a weekly or biweekly check-in. And so I was able to kind of think about, all right, like, what are the most important things that each couple should be discussing on a regular basis, and have it become like that routine or ritual, is setting aside time, right? Like making that a priority. I think it's when couples are like, oh, we don't have any time. Like, sure, like people are busy, right? I don't want to invalidate that. And when I've worded like, well, so you haven't prioritized your partnership then, they're like, ooh, I don't like the way that sounds. Yeah, because that's what's happening. You're not prioritizing time with your partner. And so the relationship is going to take a hit. And so what I've liked to help couples do is, after we kind of build those foundations of communication, it's like, all right, go practice this. And so part of that check-in is the first part of it is like, okay, what's all the good stuff that happened? Like, are we acknowledging and appreciating our partner? Like, this week I noticed that, like, you picked up extra chores around the house. Like, that was super helpful. Like, thank you for thinking of me and making my life a little bit easier this week, right? Like, share with each other the good stuff that's going on and appreciate one another and acknowledge it. And then the next piece kind of that check-in is like, all right, is there anything lingering? Have we not discussed something? Have I been feeling a particular way that I haven't had a chance to talk to you about? Or maybe we did and we need to follow up on that conversation, right? And making sure that feedback is A, done in an effective and respectful way, because how we discuss, we want our partner to be able to hear what we're saying, and being able to take that feedback and really sit with it for a moment and have a thoughtful response and being able to come up with a plan together. And then the end of that check-in is like, okay, like, what's coming up this week or next 2 weeks, right? Like, is anything super stressful? Do you need extra time here? Do you need extra support? How can we be there for each other looking forward? And let's make sure we schedule the next check-in that's on both our calendars to make sure it's a priority. And I think that couples at first kind of like, it took some time to like tweak and work this out to make sure it was a good flow. But then once they found a good flow with it, they're like, we love to do this check-in. Because I wanted them afterwards to pair it with a fun activity, right? So it's like afterwards, we're going to go for a walk together, or we're going to go get brunch or whatever it is, right? Like, we just prioritize the important stuff of a relationship. And now we're going to go hang out like friends and like lovers and enjoy our time. Because I mean, kind of a lot of the point of a relationship is like quality time, and you're spending this with a person. You've chosen to spend your time with somebody else. So it should be fun, right? Like, a portion of it should be fun and lighthearted. So I think for the listeners, a huge part is, yes, make time for serious conversations, but also don't forget that it should be fun and easy the other part of the time too.
I love how you threw in that positive reinforcement, like pairing it up with the fun activity and the check-in. Mm-hmm. Like, that's positive reinforcement in the best example I heard, you know. That's what we're talking about.
Thanks, Jocelyn. Yeah. It's like, so I remember, yeah. Even after these bad conversations, or not, I don't want to say bad conversations, tough conversations, maybe sometimes.
Uncomfortable, discomfort.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Not something that you love to do, but I know afterwards, like, all right, once we're done with it, then we can like go get brunch. Like, we can go do something mm-hmm. fun together. So it is paired, right? Like, paired with something good for the relationship. So I hope the listeners were able to get some good information and tips from this episode of communication and connection versus disconnection. Jocelyn, thank you so much for being on again. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours on so many things, millions and millions of things. So I really appreciate you being on today and giving us our time to talk about this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me back. I love having these conversations, and I love that we had the opportunity to dive a little deeper today and get into a little bit more detail. And I really do hope the listeners can take some of this and apply it to their own relationships, because to me, that's where always the real work happens, outside of sessions, outside of these times in people's day-to-day lives. So Kira, thank you so much again. And Daniela, thank you so much for your awesome questions. I loved being here, and, yeah, hopefully be back in the future and, you know, get into it and talk a little more about those underlying issues. But thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And if anyone is interested in couples therapy and wants to work with Jocelyn, you can head over to healyourrootswellness.com and schedule a call. And we'd love to set you up.
This is a Bivesta production.